Throughout your life, you've probably seen a lot of these kinds of worldwide maps displaying different kinds of global data. And if you paid close enough attention to all of them, you would have noticed a peculiar pattern emerging in this corner of northwestern Africa time and time again that might seem rather strange to you at first. Because it seems that no matter what kind of data the map being shown to you is trying to display, this territory in Africa is almost always left as blank or simply listed as no data. Here is a map showing global GDP per capita in 2022 that shows this territory blank with no data. Here is another map showing the share of global population with access to electricity that shows the same territory blank with no data. Here is a map that shows global population density that still shows the same territory blank with no data. Or how about this map that shows global per capita CO2 emissions that also shows the same territory blank with no data? Or this map that shows worldwide daily meat consumption per person that shows the same territory blank with no data? This map showing global Human Development Index scores that shows the same territory blank with no data? This map showing global prison population rates that shows the same territory blank and with no data? This map showing the US State Department's current travel advisories that list the same territory as blank with no data? Or this map showing net migration rates worldwide that still leaves the same territory blank and with no data. I could really just keep going on and on here, because no matter what kind of data map you're looking at, the same area in Africa is pretty much always left blank and labeled with the same simple phrase over and over again: no data. So why is that, and what's going on here? If you look at the territory on Google Maps, you'll see it labeled as Western Sahara, and you will notice a conspicuous dashed line marking its northernmost border with Morocco. But then, when you consult the list of countries who are members of the United Nations, you won't find any of them under the name of Western Sahara, because Western Sahara is more of a geographic expression than it is a country. What that dashed line across the border between Western Sahara and Morocco that's displayed in Google Maps implies is that Western Sahara is a currently disputed territory. It's the single largest active territorial dispute that's currently ongoing in the whole of Africa, and it's among the largest anywhere in the world. In reality, Western Sahara is about the same size as the United Kingdom, and about 80% of it is currently under the de facto control of Morocco, who refers to all of these territories as their southern provinces, including the parts they don't actually control. Meanwhile, the other 20% of Western Sahara's territory is basically an empty desert that's theoretically under the de facto control of an organization that refers to itself as the Polisario Front, a nationalist movement made up of Western Sahara's indigenous people known as the Sahrawis, who claim the entirety of Western Sahara's territory as their own country that they call the Sahrawi Arab Democratic Republic, or the SADR for short. The Polisario Front rejects Morocco's presence in Western Sahara that they regard as an illegal foreign occupation of their country, while Morocco continues to claim the entirety of Western Sahara as their own sovereign territory, including the smaller eastern and southern territories that are currently, theoretically, controlled by the Polisario. The two sides have been engaged in a violent war for the control over Western Sahara for decades, and the territories they actually control are currently separated by a massive 2,700-kilometer-long wall made out of sand and stone that carves through the desert and which contains millions of landmines within it, probably making it the longest continuous minefield that can be found anywhere in the world. And recently, the conflict between them has been heating up, and it threatens to draw in foreign powers from around the world. A long-standing ceasefire between Morocco and the Polisario Front collapsed only in 2020, and the hot war between them has resumed along the active front line. The United States, Israel, and most of the Western world more heavily supports Morocco and its territorial claims to Western Sahara, while Russia, China, Iran, and especially next-door Algeria more heavily support the Polisario Front and their claims to Western Sahara as the SADR. Algeria's heavy support for the Polisario Front's war effort and Morocco's increasingly close relationship with Israel have devastated relations between the two North African countries despite their similar cultures and histories. The land border between them has been sealed shut for decades ever since 1994, largely over the Western Sahara issue, while Morocco has retaliated by asserting its own support for the self-determination movement of the ethnically Berber-majority Kabylia region within Algeria. Algeria severed its diplomatic relations with Morocco in 2021, and the two countries have been engaged in an increasingly escalating arms race ever since 2020, with Morocco loading up on American and Israeli weapon systems, and Algeria doing the same with Russian and Chinese arms, as the disagreement over Western Sahara's political status increasingly approaches the risk of a boiling point. The conflict involves access to enormous reserves of phosphates in Western Sahara that are critical for synthetic fertilizers and global agricultural supply chains, potentially rich offshore natural gas reserves, and the future of energy trade routes to the European Union, as Western Sahara is increasingly being viewed as a vital strategic crossroads for oil and gas pipelines from sub-Saharan Africa to cross in order to reach Europe. The conflict in Western Sahara, despite not being as well covered as other major global conflicts, bears enormous repercussions for the future. And though an all-out shooting war between Morocco and Algeria over the issue has so far been avoided, the danger has not passed so long as the Western Sahara dispute continues to remain unresolved. And in order to understand how we got to this point here today, it's helpful to understand some of the history of the region first. The territory of what would eventually become known as Western Sahara was first acquired by the Spanish during the infamous Berlin Conference of 1884, when the various colonial European powers carved up the African continent between them. Throughout the period of Spanish colonial control that would last for nearly the next century, the territory would be known as Spanish Sahara, while in the early 20th century, Spain also established a protectorate within Morocco that consisted of a northern and southern strip of territory in modern-day Morocco, while the rest of Morocco was incorporated as a French protectorate around the same time. Most of the French and Spanish protectorates in Morocco achieved their independence in 1956, as the French were heavily occupied at the time with their attempts to violently put down the anti-colonial revolt going on in their colony of Algeria right next door. So after Morocco became freshly independent again and with their monarchy restored back to power as well, the Moroccan king sought to seize the opportunity and the momentum and claim all of the remaining Spanish possessions in Western Africa around him, which at the time included the southern strip of the Spanish-Morocco protectorate that still remained. The colony of Ifni, the Spanish-governed North African cities like Ceuta and Melilla, and the Spanish Sahara, which were all administered by Spain at the time as separate possessions. In 1957, the year after they achieved their independence, the Moroccans launched an attack into the southern strip of Spanish Morocco, and then invaded Spanish Sahara as well, on the basis that both territories had been historically Moroccan. Spain managed to eject the Moroccans from Spanish Sahara, but agreed to cede over the strip of southern Morocco to the Moroccans in 1958. However, the Spanish still retained their colonial control over the city of Sidi Ifni within Morocco as an enclave for the next decade until 1969, when they finally returned it back to Morocco under relentless international pressure to do so. But they still retained their control over Spanish Sahara and the northern cities of Ceuta and Melilla. Meanwhile, after around 1 million Algerians were killed during the brutal fight for their own independence against the French since 1954, the French finally decided to cut their losses and fully withdrew from Algeria in 1962, and granted them their independence as well. In the immediate aftermath, the border between Algeria and Morocco had never been properly defined or demarcated by the colonial French authorities, and after achieving independence from the French, Algeria emerged as a pan-Arabist socialist state that stood in stark ideological contrast with Morocco's conservative monarchist regime. In 1963, the year after Algeria achieved their independence, the Moroccan monarchy calculated that in order to try and suppress their own domestic socialist and pan-Arab elements who threatened their continued monarchical rule, and sensing the opportunity to take advantage of socialist Algeria's post-independence chaos and previous bloodshed, they needed to press their territorial claims to Algerian provinces like Tindouf and Colombe-Bashar, that they claimed had also been historically Moroccan. And so, Moroccan troops launched an invasion. This led to a conflict between them that became known as the Sand War, during which hundreds of soldiers were killed on both sides before the Organization of African Unity, the predecessor to the modern African Union, mediated a ceasefire between them that left the border completely unchanged. And in the process, the relationship between newly independent monarchist Morocco and socialist Algeria was immediately tarnished, and it set the tone for their confrontational relationship that has existed ever since into the present day. Nearly a decade after the Moroccan-Algerian War in 1972, the two countries finally settled their border dispute with a formal border demarcation agreement that very notably included each of their commitments to recognizing their colonial-era borders in Africa as a permanent inheritance to avoid further bloodshed, something that would almost be immediately challenged within only a few short years. Spanish Sahara was still a colony directly ruled by Spain at this point, but international pressure was mounting on the Francoist regime in Madrid to also finally give it up. The following year, in 1973, the Polisario Front was founded in Spanish Sahara amongst the territory's indigenous Sahrawi community, with the goal of waging an armed insurgency against the Spanish colonizers until they agreed to leave and to grant them their independence. At the same time, both of the now independent states of Mauritania and Morocco, on either side of Spanish Sahara, claimed the entire colony as being rightfully theirs, and argued that Spain should surrender the territory to them instead. Morocco's claims to Spanish Sahara were especially vocal, and it took its case to the International Court of Justice, or the ICJ. Morocco's legal argument was based on the fact that before the area of Spanish Sahara became a Spanish colony in the 19th century, the Moroccan Sultan had appointed tax collectors and sheikhs to the territory in order to exert authority over the territory's nomadic tribes. Spain ultimately argued during this case that those 19th century tribes refused to be taxed by Morocco, and the ICJ ultimately ruled against Morocco's claims to the territory in October of 1975, on the basis that Morocco never actually exercised full sovereignty over the territory in the pre-colonial past. Instead, the court ruled that the indigenous Sahrawi people of the territory were entitled to the right of self-determination, and therefore, the right to choose their own destiny between an independent state or joining with Morocco or Mauritania. The ICJ's decision enraged the Moroccan monarchy, and on the same evening when the ICJ's decision was being announced, the Moroccan king took to his country's TV and radio and called for hundreds of thousands of volunteers to rise up and to go march into Spanish Sahara and effectively colonize it and claim the territory for Morocco with their own bodies in a flagrant disregard for the ICJ's ruling. In November of 1975, a massive crowd of around 350,000 unarmed Moroccan settlers who had heeded their king's call marched across the border from southern Morocco into the Spanish Sahara during an event known as the Green March. At the time, Spain's 82-year-old longtime dictator Francisco Franco had just entered into a coma and was on his deathbed. And fearing the dual instability of Franco's looming death and the power transition, and a potential colonial war breaking out with Morocco over their Sahara colony, the Spanish authorities at the time decided to withdraw from the colony, and they entered directly into negotiations with Morocco and Mauritania in what ended up becoming known as the Madrid Accords. Essentially, Spain agreed to withdraw from the colony and to partition it between Morocco and Mauritania, with Morocco gaining about the northern two-thirds and Mauritania gaining the southern third, while Spain itself was supposed to retain a 30% equity stake in the most valuable asset in the colony, the lucrative phosphate mine here at Bou Kra, though Morocco would end up taking the whole mine over anyway. The territory's indigenous Sahrawi people, the Polisario Front, and Algeria, however, were not consulted and took no part in the negotiations. Immediately afterward, the Polisario Front shifted their guerrilla war of independence against Spain into a guerrilla war of independence against both Morocco and Mauritania instead, while Algeria next door, horrified at what Morocco had just done to the Spanish Sahara and the precedent that it could end up setting for the regions in Algeria that Morocco had also invaded and attempted to conquer only a decade previously, decided to throw their full diplomatic and military support behind the Polisario Front's insurgency. In a show of solidarity with the Sahrawi people, the Algerians expelled 45,000 Moroccans out of their country. And then in 1976, the Polisario Front unilaterally proclaimed the Sahrawi Arab Democratic Republic, or the SADR, based on the whole territory of what is now known as Western Sahara. And Algeria became the very first country to recognize their independence and sovereignty, which led Morocco to sever their diplomatic relations with Algeria. A bloody war between the Polisario Front, armed and supported by Algeria, and the Mauritanian and Moroccan-occupied areas in Western Sahara began. But shortly afterwards, in 1979, Mauritania decided to just give up and withdrew from Western Sahara altogether, which left the remaining fight in the territory between the Moroccans and the Polisario to continue. By 1981, the Moroccan armed forces began adopting a new strategy of building out a series of walls and fortifications to separate their controlled areas in Western Sahara from those areas that still remained under the control of the Polisario Front. By 1987, this had culminated with the completion of a truly massive, continuous wall made out of sand and stone that carved across the nearly uninhabited desert, that continues to separate the Moroccan-controlled and administered areas in the west from the frontier in the east of the territory along the borders with Mauritania and Algeria. The wall became known as simply the berm, and it is still, to this date, the largest and longest active military wall and series of fortifications anywhere in the world. The Moroccans filled the wall in with literally millions of landmines, which also makes it the longest continuous minefield in the world as well. These millions of landmines make the wall almost impenetrable. But if that wasn't enough, the Moroccans also built and continue to man observation posts at roughly 5 kilometer intervals across their entire side of the wall too. Complete with airfields, artillery positions, and military bases that dot the area behind the wall as well, while a series of fixed and mobile radar systems throughout the wall with a 60 to 80 kilometer range permanently observe the ground in front of the wall within the Polisario-controlled areas to detect any potential artillery fire and troop movements in the otherwise empty and largely uninhabited desert. The areas to the east of this wall within Western Sahara are often labeled on maps as being controlled or administered by the Polisario Front, but that's not entirely accurate. These territories of Western Sahara to the east of the berm are uninhabited, empty desert with nothing useful. While the Polisario Front relocated their own operational headquarters to the growing Sahrawi refugee camps that were established across the border in neighboring Algeria's Tindouf province a long time ago. Algeria has hosted the Polisario Front as essentially an armed militia or government in exile across the border for decades now, and they've allowed them to continue organizing and launching attacks into Western Sahara from these camps on Algerian soil as well. However, in order to attack the berm and the Moroccan soldiers who guard it, the Polisario's fighters would have to travel through Mauritania first before launching their attacks across the border from there into Western Sahara, which is why these eastern territories within Western Sahara, wedged in between the Moroccan wall in the west and the Mauritanian border in the east, aren't really so much controlled by the Polisario Front, as they've been left alone as a buffer zone by the Moroccans. The Polisario fighters are left with no other choice but to cross from Mauritania into the empty, uninhabited desert on their way to the berm and their homeland that's locked away behind it, where they will be quickly spotted by Moroccan radar and aircraft as the only moving targets for hundreds of kilometers of open desert, which will then make them sitting ducks for Moroccan artillery and airstrikes. Morocco's ensuing occupation of Western Sahara, its flagrant disregard for the ICJ's ruling on the territory, its war against the indigenous Sahrawis, its construction of a massive wall with millions of landmines dividing the territory, and its transfer of hundreds of thousands of their own settlers into the occupied territories violated numerous principles of international law. And so the United Nations has continually rejected Morocco's presence in Western Sahara, and still to this day considers it to be an illegal occupation. The African Union also fiercely criticized Morocco's occupation of Western Sahara as the single biggest violation on the continent of one of the African Union's biggest guiding principles, that all the countries of Africa should accept and settle their inherited colonial borders in order to avoid wide-scale bloody wars in the pursuit of ethnic, racial, or religious homogeneity, or in the pursuit of settling historical claims and grievances. After the African Union chose to recognize the independence of the Polisario-run SADR based on the territory of Western Sahara in 1984, Morocco became the first, and so far, only African country to ever withdraw from the Union. Eventually in 1991, after somewhere between 10,000 and 20,000 deaths due to the past 16 years of war in Western Sahara, and after tens of thousands of Sahrawi refugees have been pushed out and forced into those refugee camps in neighboring Algeria and Mauritania, Morocco and the Polisario Front finally agreed on a ceasefire that was brokered by the United Nations. By that point, Morocco controlled roughly 80% of Western Sahara's territory, including all of its natural resources and virtually its entire coastline behind their wall that they built up, while the remaining 20% of Western Sahara had been left behind as that empty, easily defensible buffer zone. And the entire Polisario leadership had been pushed out into the Sahrawi refugee camps in Algeria. As a part of that 1991 ceasefire agreement, the UN was allowed to deploy a peacekeeping mission to Western Sahara, composed of non-Moroccan and non-Sahrawi troops who maintained two separate but related objectives in the territory: to maintain the peace between both sides and to establish the conditions for an eventual referendum in Western Sahara to determine the territory's ultimate status and future. Very uniquely, however, in the case of this particular UN peacekeeping mission to Western Sahara, it is the only one in the entire world that does not have the permission to monitor human rights in the territory in which it operates, which leaves Western Sahara in many respects as a bit of an information black hole, especially when it comes to the human rights record in the territory. The Moroccan government outlawed all civilian construction and military activities in the empty eastern territories beyond the berm, leaving it all behind as a desolate no-man's zone between them and the Polisario based across the border in Algeria, where neither Moroccans nor Polisario often ventured, and where only the UN's peacekeeping forces were authorized to enter. So again, while this territory was technically left to the Polisario's authority beyond the berm and the de facto Moroccan-controlled areas in Western Sahara, it's also really just a no-man's buffer zone in practice. Morocco agreed with the UN in 1991 that it would eventually hold a referendum in the territory to determine its final status. But to date, more than 33 years later now, it still never has. Far to the contrary, Morocco has expanded the number of its settlers in the territory since then, encouraging more Moroccans to relocate there with generous tax breaks and high salaries for civil servant positions that has steadily increased Morocco's demographic control over the territory. At the present day in the 2020s, it's estimated that the total population of the Western Sahara territory is around 600,000 people. And about two-thirds of all those people are Moroccan settlers or their descendants who have arrived or been born in the territory since 1975. And virtually all of those 600,000 people live within the territory that Morocco controls on the ground to the west of the berm wall. There are also now more ethnic Sahrawis who live beyond Western Sahara than inside of it, with around 160,000 Sahrawis who live within the Moroccan-controlled areas of Western Sahara, and another 174,000 displaced Sahrawi refugees who live just across the border in Algeria, and another 26,000 more refugees across the border in Mauritania. These demographic facts sit at the core of the dispute over any potential referendum in the territory, and why hosting one has been stalled out for decades now. Morocco has continually insisted that while they want to host a referendum, they argue that everybody in the territory should get an equal vote in the referendum, including all of the Moroccan settlers and their descendants who have arrived to the territory since 1975. Which, since they represent about two-thirds of the total population now, would almost certainly mean an electoral victory to keep Western Sahara Moroccan. The Polisario Front, meanwhile, has insisted that any referendum exclude the settlers and their descendants who have arrived to the territory since 1975, which would all but guarantee a Sahrawi electoral victory that would expel Morocco's sovereignty from the region. Throughout this whole period, the UN has continually classified Western Sahara's status as a non-self-governing territory, which is why it has also often been labeled as Africa's final remaining colony, where the process of decolonization has still not been fully completed or implemented. And it's also why collecting data for just about anything inside of Western Sahara is just so damn difficult, which is why the disputed territory usually always shows up as a blank space on every world map you see, and why it's simply called the more neutral Western Sahara, instead of Southern Morocco or the Sahrawi Arab Democratic Republic. And Morocco doesn't want to give the territory up, not just because it has hundreds of thousands of settlers there, who would probably have to be mass relocated back to Morocco in that event, but also because there's a lot of strategic and economic value to their continued control of Western Sahara as well. Western Sahara includes a very rich deposit of phosphates here at the Bou Kra mine, which usually produces around 3 million tons of phosphates a year, about 10% of Morocco's total phosphate production that's a critical ingredient for modern synthetic fertilizers and modern industrial agriculture. Morocco is currently the world's second largest producer of phosphates only after China, but Morocco also controls by far the largest proven reserves of phosphate rocks in the world. And if it manages to increase production, it'll eclipse China's production. With Western Sahara producing around 10% of Morocco's total phosphate yield, if that translated, even broadly, to the relative amounts of phosphate reserves in both Morocco proper and Western Sahara, then it would mean that Western Sahara likely contains the second or at least the third largest amount of reserves of phosphate rock in the world. That ultimately means that if Western Sahara were to gain its independence, it would become a major competitor to the virtual monopoly on global phosphate supplies that Morocco currently enjoys, and it would serve to undermine Morocco's ability to control the price of phosphates in the future. As it currently stands now, the Bou Craa phosphate mine that Morocco operates in Western Sahara transports its phosphate rocks out to market by way of the longest conveyor belt in the world, stretching for 100 kilometers across the open desert from the mine to the port of El Marsa on the Atlantic coast. The wind that blows the rock's white powder off of the conveyor belt onto the yellow and brown sand around it causes the conveyor belt's path to be clearly visible from space, making it one of the few single man-made objects that is visible to astronauts, and a potent symbol of Morocco's exploitation of Western Sahara's resources. And in addition to the phosphates, Western Sahara's long coastline with the Atlantic grants it a large exclusive economic zone under international maritime law that Morocco also asserts as its own. The area contains rich fisheries and potentially rich reserves of offshore natural gas as well, recently believed to be possible after an enormous series of offshore natural gas discoveries were made after 2015 close by off the coast of Mauritania just to the south. The revealed Mauritania had around 1,400 cubic kilometers worth of proven offshore gas reserves, which suddenly put Mauritania's gas reserves in the realm of comparison to petrostates like Libya and Norway. While offshore gas exploration within Western Sahara's waters have been limited because of the region's conflict and disputed status, Morocco has recently signed an agreement with an Israeli company to begin searching for offshore gas in the Western Saharan EEZ anyway. So as the promised referendum in Western Sahara never came after continuous delays, and as Morocco continued to exploit the territory's resources on an industrial scale and increase the number of its settlers there by hundreds of thousands, and after Morocco was readmitted back into the African Union again in 2017 despite leaving the Western Sahara question still unresolved, the Polisario Front over on the other side of the berm's millions of landmines stuck sitting in crowded refugee camps in Algeria was growing more and more impatient and angry. The long conflict in Western Sahara had become a forgotten one on the global stage, as world attention shifted elsewhere. And with increasing political support from abroad, Morocco began steadily tightening its grip on Western Sahara even further. In November of 2020, after 29 years of the ceasefire holding in the territory but with no diplomatic progress towards a solution ever being made, Moroccan troops entered into the demilitarized town of Guerguerat near the de facto line of control, which the Polisario Front declared was a violation of the ceasefire agreement, which they responded to with renewed armed attacks against the Moroccan army along the berm wall that they began launching from their camps in Algeria again. And with that, the 29-year-long ceasefire agreement collapsed and war returned to Western Sahara once again, that has continued ever since. A month after that, in December of 2020, at the tail end of Donald Trump's first term in office, the Trump administration ended decades of American foreign policy precedent relating to Western Sahara when they formally extended America's recognition of Morocco's annexation of the territory and Morocco's sovereignty over it, making the United States the very first country in history to formally side with Morocco on the issue. In exchange, the Trump administration managed to convince Morocco to fully normalize their own relations with Israel, which then led the Israelis to become the second foreign country to formally recognize Morocco's sovereignty over Western Sahara later in 2023. Since that time, other countries like Russia have been quick to point out the perceived hypocrisy in America's foreign policy relating to the conquests and annexations of territory deemed to be occupied by the international community. Because of the Trump administration, Washington now recognizes Morocco's annexation of occupied Western Sahara and Israel's annexations of the occupied Golan Heights in East Jerusalem. But Washington simultaneously denounces Russia's annexations of occupied Ukrainian territories as a violation of international law. Regardless of the perceived inconsistencies, though, Morocco has since wielded its American and Israeli diplomatic support for their claims to Western Sahara to further solidify their grip over the territory and to reject any notion of ever holding an independence referendum. And they have greatly increased their purchases of American and Israeli weapons to enforce those claims even further on the ground. In light of the Polisario Front continuing their attacks from Algeria into Western Sahara again starting in 2020, Morocco has dramatically increased their military spending by nearly fourfold just since 2019, to a $13.4 billion budget in 2024 that has included purchases of hundreds of American-made Abrams main battle tanks, around 500 Bradley fighting vehicles, and scores of HIMARS rocket artillery systems and ATACMS long-range missiles that have all been battle-tested recently in Ukraine, in addition to several F-16 fighter jets and MQ-9 Reaper drones. They even had signed a deal to purchase 300 Israeli-built Merkava tanks before that deal stalled after the Israelis decided that they needed the tanks for themselves for their own invasion of Gaza. And this has all sparked massive alarm bells in Algeria, Morocco's longtime rival of decades now. Algeria still firmly supports the Polisario Front in Western Sahara, both diplomatically and militarily. Not to mention that they continue hosting the Polisario Front's headquarters on their own territory still in Tindouf. And now they also fear that Morocco's increasingly close diplomatic and military ties with another one of their major declared enemies, Israel, represents an even greater security threat to them than ever before. This perception hasn't been helped recently by the fact that Morocco's ambassador to the United Nations, Omar Hilail, declared during a speech in 2021 that the sometimes restive, ethnically Berber-majority region of Kabylia in the north of Algeria had the right to self-determination from Algeria as well, in an apparent counter to Algeria's continued support for the SADR in Western Sahara. Algeria recalled its ambassador from Morocco over the incident, and then just a few months later, another scandal broke out when an international consortium of journalists accused Morocco of having used Israeli-made spyware to intercept the sensitive communications of around 6,000 Algerian government officials. In August of 2021, after accusing Morocco of massive espionage assisted by Israel, the Algerian government decided to take the step of once again severing its diplomatic relations with Morocco. And the two have been engaged in an escalating arms race in the region ever since that is based on their differing viewpoints of the status of Western Sahara. From 2019 to 2024, while Morocco's military spending increased nearly fourfold, Algeria's military spending also more than doubled in order to match it, from $9.1 billion in 2019 up to $21 billion in 2024, which is set to increase even further to more than $25 billion next year in 2025. As a percentage of GDP spent on the military, Algeria now maintains the second highest military budget in the entire world, at nearly 9.4% of its total GDP, remaining only behind Ukraine. And unlike Morocco, about four-fifths of Algeria's military hardware purchases have all exclusively been made with Russia. Polisario sources have claimed the Moroccan airstrikes and drone strikes on the other side of the berm since the ceasefire collapsed in late 2020 have killed as many as 100 civilians there, including a very controversial incident in November of 2021 when a Moroccan drone strike hit an Algerian truck that was carrying fuel to Polisario-controlled areas that killed three Algerian citizens. Morocco would like to maintain the buffer zone in the east of Western Sahara as it is, though, because if they moved in to take the whole territory over up to the borders with Mauritania and Algeria to fully keep the Polisario out of Western Sahara altogether, the Polisario Front's fighters would then just be attacking directly into Western Sahara from their camps in Algeria, and the Moroccans might then have to respond by bombing the Polisario within Algeria itself, which would risk igniting the bigger war between Morocco and Algeria that both countries are attempting to avoid. And so, Morocco is still content, for now, with just keeping their soldiers behind the berm and leaving the eastern territories of Western Sahara as an empty buffer zone where they can bomb and attack the Polisario's fighters in whenever they cross into it from over the border from Algeria and Mauritania. Since the collapse of the ceasefire in Western Sahara and the resumption of hostilities, Morocco has insisted that the only viable solution to the conflict is the recognition of Western Sahara as an autonomous province under ultimate Moroccan sovereignty. This plan is currently the plan supported by the United States and Israel, but other Western-aligned countries have started supporting it as well. In 2022, Spain publicly accepted Morocco's plans for Western Saharan autonomy within Morocco, which led to Algeria withdrawing its ambassador from Madrid in protest. And then in October of 2024, the French also voiced their support for Morocco's plans for Western Saharan autonomy within Morocco, which also infuriated Algeria and led to the Algerians withdrawing their ambassador from Paris as well. Since the Trump administration's recognition of Morocco's claims to Western Sahara at the end of 2020, the international position of the Polisario Front and their support from Algeria have continued growing more and more diplomatically isolated. As it currently stands now, at the end of 2024, only 46 UN member states formally recognize the SADR as the rightful independent state of Western Sahara. Most of them concentrated across Africa, who are led by Algeria, and others in Latin America, and a few outliers like Iran, Vietnam, and North Korea. While dozens of other countries have withdrawn their previous recognition of the SADR, like India and Serbia being the two most notable examples. While Morocco's territorial claims to Western Sahara are formally recognized by the United States and Israel, and diplomatically supported by France and Spain, among others. To an extent, Morocco has been able to carefully court its current diplomatic support to Western Sahara from the Western world through a clever combination of carrots and sticks. Using carrots, it agreed to normalize its relations with Israel in exchange for American diplomatic support. And through its geographic control of most of Western Sahara, it is increasingly controlling a critical space on the map that is becoming an important crossroads for African energy supplies entering into Europe. The Moroccans have proposed a massive $25 billion natural gas pipeline project that would connect the huge gas reserves of Nigeria and elsewhere in West Africa along all of their coasts directly to Spain and Europe. If it gets successfully built out, the project would open up a major new source of natural gas to European economies who have divested themselves from Russia's once huge supplies of natural gas to the continent. And Western Sahara is the critical space on the board to make all of that happen, which is a large part behind the explanation of Spain and France's current declared support for the Moroccan side of the conflict there. And using sticks, Morocco has also effectively utilized its geographic position nearby to Spain and even bordering the Spanish cities in North Africa directly, Ceuta and Melilla, by simply allowing migrants from Morocco and elsewhere in Africa to just pour into Spain unchecked and unhindered, which all on its own contributed to a whopping 40% rise in illegal immigration into Spain between 2021 and 2022, before Spain decided to suddenly announce its diplomatic support for Morocco's autonomy plan in Western Sahara. And the Moroccan government decided to respond to that by finally clamping down on the migrant flows. Recently in October of 2024, with the conflict in Western Sahara still unresolved nearly half a century later, after the Spanish first decided to withdraw from the colony, the UN envoy for Western Sahara suggested the idea of simply partitioning Western Sahara as it exists today between the Moroccan-controlled area and the no-man's zone in the east. With the Moroccan-controlled areas getting formally recognized as being annexed and incorporated into Morocco, and the no-man's zone areas getting formally recognized as the independent state of the SAD. That the Polisario have been fighting for generations. However, both Morocco and the Polisario Front flatly rejected that idea almost immediately after it was proposed. Morocco has continued to maintain that the best deal it can possibly offer is granting the territory a large degree of autonomy within the Moroccan state, while the Polisario Front has continued insisting that the ICJ's 1975 ruling that demanded an independence referendum be hosted in the territory is their only condition they will accept for peace now. With neither side yet willing to compromise and the fighting ongoing between them, with the Polisario still being allowed to organize and launch their attacks into Western Sahara from Algeria, and with Morocco and Algeria increasingly ballooning their military budgets and equipment in preparation for a potential confrontation over the issue, the status of Western Sahara today is still a deeply controversial issue that risks sparking a wider war across North Africa if it is not handled by diplomats appropriately. It's unclear where the conflict is ultimately headed in the future from here. But with firm US and Israeli support both diplomatically and militarily, and with increasing Western support from Spain and France too, it's likely that Morocco will just keep increasingly getting its way in the conflict towards their autonomy plan unless the Polisario Front and their primary backers in Algeria decide to dramatically escalate the conflict in order to gamble on a desperate and potential military solution to the conflict instead, seeing as how they've effectively lost diplomatically by this point. Skilled diplomacy will be needed to avert the worst outcome, and only time will tell what will ultimately happen. Now, there's a lot of data that goes into producing these kinds of videos. Whether it's visually showing you all of those different kinds of maps that don't display any data for Western Sahara, detailing out the modern demographic situation in and around Western Sahara, or showing you the various economic interests that Morocco has in Western Sahara and why they want to maintain control over it so badly, the ability to actually visualize raw data like this on the map instead of just reading about it in text format is exactly what makes learning about these kinds of complicated geopolitical subjects so fascinating to me. And it's why the Exploring Data Visually course is one of my favorite courses that I've ever taken with this video's sponsor, Brilliant. They start out by teaching some real bare-bones fundamentals through interactive exercise and straightforward explanations. Then as you progress, they bring these small concepts together into the bigger process. And soon enough, you have a decent grasp of what originally seemed like a daunting subject. And the same goes for all of the other subjects they cover too. From calculus to AI to computer science, advanced physics, geometry, and so much more. I really think that Brilliant is perfect for the kind of person who genuinely loves understanding new things, as they get you to the level where you can genuinely apply the concepts you learn into your everyday life. And they also make learning super practical too. Their courses break down into short segments of only about 15 minutes. So you can easily use their app to make steady progress in learning while you're commuting or whenever you've got some free time. So, if you're the type of person who loves learning new things, you can try out everything Brilliant has to offer for free for a full 30 days by clicking the button here on your screen right now, or by visiting brilliant.org/reallifelore, or by clicking the link that's down below in the description. And best of all, you'll also get 20% off of an annual premium subscription. It's an incredible way to help support my channel and learn some cool new things at the same time. And as always, thank you so much for watching.